For WTOP News, it's the Book Report. I'm Tariq King. Karine Jean-Pierre made history as the first Black and openly gay White House press secretary, serving as one of the most visible voices of the Biden administration during a time of transition and turbulence. And now Karine Jean-Pierre is speaking for herself. In her new memoir, Independent, A Look Inside a Broken White House Outside the Party Lines, Karine reflects on her years inside the West Wing and why she ultimately decided to step away from the Democratic Party. It's a book about loyalty, disillusionment, and what she calls the struggle to find integrity in modern politics. It's my pleasure to welcome Karine Jean-Pierre to WTOP, talk about what you've learned and what it means to go independent. Thanks for being on the Book Report today.
Thank you so much, Tariq. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
And you look so sort of rested.
They call it the White House glow up.
Yeah, like post glow up, right?
Yeah. Post glow up, to be clear. Yeah, I got to add that post in there.
And so, you know, I always start with every author I speak to, I always start with the simplest of questions, which is essentially, what is this book about, right? In your case, it's your personal story, but obviously a lot more as well.
Yeah, thank you for saying that last part. It is a lot more. I mean, I use a particular moment in time to, you know, pull back the curtains and give people a little taste of what it was like being in the White House. But really, the book is trying to meet the moment of where we are and how do we move forward. And what I was hoping for is that the book gives a road map to how do you stay engaged? How do you get involved? I think one of the things that we have to be really clear about is that the chaos that we're currently seeing in this moment is the point. And you don't want to be silenced. You want to make sure that you are speaking out loud because they want to silence you. They want to put fear. Fear causes people to be silent. So that's my goal, is to hopefully give people a roadmap, focus on the future, focus on the moment, and how do we reimagine where we are right now.
So again, two parts, personal story and roadmap going forward. So I want to start with the sort of personal recollection part of the story so far.
For sure.
So you wrote in the book that Democratic leaders, quote, abandoned and betrayed President Biden by pushing him out of the 2024 race. Why did that moment strike you, or that move strike you, as such a profound turning point for you personally and for him and for the party as well?
So I think one thing that people should know or remember is that I was so personally connected to that moment because I was the White House press secretary. I was going to the podium pretty regularly because of my job and what was happening in those 3 weeks between the debate and certainly when he decided to step down. And I was living it, breathing it. And I was responding consistently, constantly, to governors and Democratic leaders and congressional members, whoever they were, that were speaking up. And it was a coordinated campaign. And I thought to myself, wow, this is how we're treating someone who has given 50 plus years to the public service and has done objectively a very good job and is a decent person. And I thought, wow, why would we do this? Why would I want to be part of a party that destroys someone in that way? And so it was just hard to watch, hard to be part of, or, you know, in the way that I was as being the defender. And it really made me think. It was a devastating time, a devastating moment, not just for me, but for so many others.
Obviously, you spent a lot of time with President Biden. You were with him essentially daily, right? Yeah. Meeting with him. And you described someone who was in command of the various different streams of information that he had to manage, and he was able to execute the job. But, you know, there's a difference, I think, between sort of execution and presentation, the whole sort of flash issue. I think that, and I remember
saying,
you have
a great presentation, my friend.
I'm trying. Thank you. Well, you know, I can do the show business part, you know what I mean? But the question was, can Joe Biden, even though he can do this job, can he do the show business part that the American people need? And were you ever concerned about that personally?
So the show business part, if you mean, you know, being an orator and being out there, look, you know, for me, what mattered most to me is that this is someone who did the work and understood policy. And you got to remember, when we came in, when Biden and Harris came in, this administration, there were crises all over the place, right? There was racial uprising happening. There was COVID. There was the economy that was tanking. There was climate change. There was our relationship globally that was not in a good place and that had been blown up, if you will. And so that was the focus of the administration. How do we, like tacticians, like how do you get to work and get the job done? And, that was certainly the focus. And that's what the people wanted, right? When they got elected in 2020, they wanted someone who could bring some stabilization, someone who can give them some comfort, someone who was a leader. And truly, that's what we tried to do, I think, the first couple of years. And you're right, there is this part about being an orator and presenting. And that's where we all had a hard time with. Like, how do we present what we did and for it to break through? Either it wasn't breaking through because of the social media, misinformation, disinformation, the media not wanting to cover it, politics being as it was, you know, the discourse of politics, it was really hard to break through.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned when he got elected in 2020. Yeah. You see the flags? I read this book
myself. You sure
okay,
did.
I sure did. And on page 16,
there we go.
That was the first flag because you wrote, "No one asked him not to run again in 2024. Instead, you write that they assumed that as the incumbent, he would, of course, again be the party's nominee. Do you think that that was the party's first mistake?
So look, I think in 2023, when we were coming out of the midterms, people were basically saying, wow, we made it through the midterms. It wasn't a bloodbath. It was a historic outcome for Democrats, for any sitting president for their first midterm. It was impressive. He was the only one person who had beaten Trump. Again, objectively, had a pretty successful couple of years of the administration. So I think and publicly and privately, leaders of the Democratic Party were saying, you should go run. And my thing is, if you wanted to have a conversation with him about not running or really, you know, dig in and say, hey, let's really think about this. Should we have a primary? To me, that was the time to do it. I'm not saying they should have. I'm just saying if they wanted to, that was the time to do it.
And they didn't.
And they didn't. And that's the point that I'm making.
And not only did they not tell him not to run.
Yeah, they told him to run. And so that's my whole thing. I'm like, okay, well, do it. You should have done it then. And I don't know how he would have responded. I have no idea. But to me, that should have been the moment.
Yeah.
And to have done it with more than 100 days, you know, obviously, it was 107 for then Vice President Kamala Harris to have done the race, but to have done it in the way that they did, I think ultimately hurt us. It hurt the party.
Have you gotten a chance to read the former vice president's book?
Not yet, I am. I think it's amazing that she wrote her book. I think we need to hear her voice. She was a historic figure in a historic moment. And once I'm done with my book tour, I want to sit down and really give it some care. And
right.
Read
and of
book.
Course, she was someone that you were personally, I don't know if that was personally close, but you were her chief of staff.
Yeah, I was her chief of staff for a short period of time during the general election. So I got to know her.
Mm-hmm.
I got to know her and worked with her, but yes.
So in her book, essentially, what she is saying is that perhaps the extreme loyalty that mm-hmm. she saw demonstrated yeah. in Democratic circles to Biden was a problem. She said it was reckless, right? Mm-hmm. But you're saying in your book that there wasn't enough loyalty to Biden.
Well, I think so. I think there's two parts to it. I think in 2023, it was late. No one said anything for him not to run, right? I think that's what I'm trying to say. It was given to him to make that decision like any other incumbent, right? So I don't think there wasn't a process of like, or a talk about town. Oh my gosh, the midterms were horrible, so he can't run. Oh my gosh, you know, he shouldn't think about it. At least it wasn't loud enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was assumed, like I said in the book, that, yeah, you know what, you're in the incumbent, the midterms turned out okay. You know, you've had a successful, so far, presidential with some big historic pieces of legislation. Okay, make that decision. We're going to leave it to you to make that decision. And so it wasn't until the debate, really, that, and, you know, his age was always a talk. It was always showing up in pollings. It was something that came up in the briefing room. But it wasn't until the debate that people started to say, well, you shouldn't have done it. And it's like, okay, well, the time to have done that
but you
was
say,
in 2023.
Yeah,
you know? And
yeah.
I think it hurt us mm-hmm. to have done it the way that we did. I think it hurt her to have done it the way that we did, mm-hmm. you know.
You say a few minutes ago, you mentioned that the country was looking for a stabilizing force, which
yeah.
he was,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But also in 2020, he did make a statement. I was trying to find the exact clip, but,
yeah.
you know, we know it's there.
Yeah, transitional.
A bridge.
A bridge, right,
you know,
which is
to
why
the next generation.
He picked Kamala Harris. One of the many reasons why he picked her, mm-hmm. because he wanted to show that he is indeed a bridge, mm-hmm. that that's what he wanted, you know, making sure that she was supported, making sure that he was showing visually what he was thinking and where the party was going.
But did he actually deploy that strategy?
I think, here's what I say. He's going to write his book. Joe Biden's going to write his book. He's writing it right now, from what I understand. And I think a lot of these questions he's going to hopefully answer. And here's the thing. In June, July, that summer of 2024, when he decided to step aside and hand over the reins, if you will, to then Vice President Harris, and I believe the vice president talks about this, if I've heard correctly, that the leadership in the Democratic Party didn't want her.
She did talk about, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. They wanted an open primary and a convention that was brokered. Mm-hmm. And he, I think rightfully so, said no. Like, she is the one, because she's more than qualified. And so his behavior, I think his action showed, yeah, you know what, I made this promise. I'm stepping down. She has to get it. Mm-hmm. And she should, because she's more than qualified. And the fact that the Democratic Party tried to almost stopped her from doing that, I think also hurts, right? If you look at the black community sees that, black women sees that, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, what is going on? Why are we largely being discounted once again?
Certainly didn't help matters.
No,
that's
but
sure.
that's the point. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll talk about his timing. He'll talk about why. He'll talk about that,
I'm pretty
sure.
But what do you think, as someone who was inside? I know that there were a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
Did she get lost in the shuffle? Because yeah. I think, and I'm speaking for the streets now.
Yeah.
We're in a lovely, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, no, we want to hear from the streets.
Yeah, you know, you said a few minutes ago that there was this talk about his age. That talk had always been there. That talk was there in 2020.
That talk was there when he was vice president, right?
Exactly.
So it's not unusual. It was unusual for him. It was always talked about, mm-hmm. his age. And I've always said, and he's always said, we've always said, yes, he aged. Mm-hmm. We saw that.
Mm-hmm. Happens to all of us.
Yeah, I mean,
some age, I age.
He did. Mm-hmm. He did. But the point that I'm making, and with age comes like talking softly and, you know,
moving differently.
No one is saying that did not occur, that did not happen.
But what I think the streets wanted to see was that they wanted to see that this is a person who understood, this was a president who understood that he had accepted this as a transitional role.
Yeah.
And they wanted to see Kamala more visibly in the wings throughout the course, not just in, you know, 2024 when it all hit the fan, but they wanted to see her in 2021, 2, and 3. Yeah. And she appeared to be diminished in the eyes of the streets.
Yeah. And here's what I can say to that. That's her experience. And I know she writes about it in the book. I can't speak to how she feels and how she was treated.
Yeah, I want to know your perspective.
What I know is that I think she did a phenomenal job in the role that she had. I think she meant so much to all of us. And we all wanted her to win. And we all did everything that we can in those 107 days to make that happen. And, you know, those vice president presidential relationships are always tough. They are. It was tough with Biden and Obama. It was tough with Bush and, you know, and Quayle. They're always tough. Mm-hmm. And Clinton and Gore, I mean, that's not unusual. But I have to let her, whatever her truth is, I'm going to accept her truth and let her honestly tell that. But
did you have any real time concerns about this idea that he was supposed to be
the transitional?
Yeah.
I mean, I would say this. I would say I was glad that he had that thinking. I was glad that he wanted to make that happen. And I think if you look at the White House more broadly, he did that in the sense of the voices that he brought in. He did that in the sense of the type of administration he built. Ketanji Brown Jackson, that's a long-lasting legacy that he has. And he made a commitment and he delivered in his secretaries across the agencies, in policies that he pushed forth. So I don't think it just rested on the vice president, which is actually obviously very important, but it was also infused in the policy and how he built his administration. Mm-hmm. And it was certainly, okay, what is the long-lasting effect that we can have? How do we make sure that communities who have felt left out see themselves and feel represented? And I think that was, to me, the most important thing as well. Like, you have to not just say it, but also do it. And, you know, look, I think that he did the right thing when the time came, and protected her and supported her and made sure that she was indeed at the top of the ticket. Obviously, she did the work to get herself there too. And that's really all I can speak to at this time. And okay. I'm curious to hear what he's going to write. I think that he should be the one to speak to it.
I think we all are.
Yeah.
All right, so one more for the streets. Some people were saying, well, listen, and even in your book, you wrote that there were behind the scenes folks who didn't want to see you rise, who wanted to,
And this is why I say we got to let her truth live, because I know what she, you know, I know what she experienced, because I experienced it as well, right? So I understand.
So that was what was behind the scenes.
Yeah, I understand the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah. So the question that I had was, you know, do you feel, you know, you guys were used? That's what some folks in the streets think. You know what I mean? Like, you were used to convey this image of multicultural understanding and upward mobility that may or may not have been true. What do you think about that idea?
Look, I think it's layered. I don't necessarily feel like that's not true, right? I think it's layered. I think that when you're a first, people support you to be that first, right? And they say, oh my gosh, we're going to break this glass ceiling. We're going to make sure that you're first. We're going to get you there. And then they don't support you. That's real.
And that's not your story.
Yeah, and that's just not my story. And
Barack
that's not
Obama's
her story, right? It's not right. But I don't even want to put myself at the level of Barack Obama.
But
you know what I'm saying? But it's the story of anybody who's been othered, anybody who's been a first. Like, there's this groundswell to get you to that position, and they say, oh, we support you, and then you're judged differently. You're held at a different standard. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if, oh, now you got it.
What else do you need?
Yeah, what else do you need? And so that's why I'm saying it's layered. I'm not necessarily saying it isn't true. There's a lot of truth to that. But I will say you know, I did work for an administration or a president. I'm just talking about the president, not the other people, who called me into the Oval Office and wanted to hear what I had to say, right? Who called me from time to time and was like, okay, what's going on? I traveled with him more than 95% of the time. But there were times where I had to fight for that, not because of him, but because of others. And I write about that in the book, where I had to fight to be in the room.
Absolutely.
Fight to be in the room.
Mm-hmm. And you stayed. It's a really good read, that part of the book.
Oh, thank you.
We could do this for probably 2 hours.
I know, this was actually fun. Yeah. And I appreciate the questions. I think, it's some deep dives that really need to be asked.
Thank you. But I have to move on to, because they're looking for you in the other studio. The second part of the book. So there's your story, your personal recollections, your experiences in the administration. And then there's your forward-looking part, which is, you've decided, you've made a very strong case for why you are no longer a Democrat. You are, in fact, independent.
Yeah.
You take pains in the book to say that you're not so much advocating that other people become independent. You're giving them a window into your thinking. And I was thinking about this whole notion of being independent to be able to, you describe it. How about that?
Yeah,
what do you think is the value in political independence?
So look, I have a platform. And so one of the things that I was trying to do is to make a statement. And to figure out the best way to be like, okay, something is wrong here. And this is what I'm going to do to show that something is wrong here. And the two-party system right now isn't working. It just really isn't. You have one party that's completely lost their minds. And talking about Project 2025, you know, checking off the box. And then you have another party that feels like they've lost their spirit. They've lost their fight. Mm-hmm. And you need those two parties to actually function to have a democracy. And that's a problem when you're not seeing that. And it's also a problem when you look at D.C. right now, you look at the White House, and the power seems to be sitting right there. And it should be people power, right? And so there's this issue that is happening that's hurting us and hurting the country and hurting how we can potentially move forward. Now, looking at independence, millions of people are independent. Young people are becoming more and more independent.
Mm-hmm.
And because they don't see themselves in either party, that should send a signal. And when there's a primary, most of the time, it's closed. So independents can't even participate.
Right, in the selection of the candidate.
And so there's a system that is fundamentally broken in so many ways. It's cracked and broken in so many ways that we have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now is a time that we can reimagine how we move forward. We can reimagine the country that we want and the process that we currently have. It is not working. It is not working. We are hanging by a shoestring when it comes to our democracy. We're hanging by a shoestring when it comes to our freedom. And that's scary. That's incredibly scary. Some people would say we're already in an authoritarian regime. So we have to push our leaders to do something, to speak up. Meanwhile, you know, 7 million people showing up at a No Kings rally is certainly impressive and it's heartening. That means people are paying attention. They have the attention of the people. Mm-hmm. They're paying attention. So mm-hmm. do something.
I wanted to drill down on this independence because I think that the closed primary system compels people to register for one party or the other.
Yep. And they don't want to.
Right.
They don't want to.
But they want to have a voice in the selection.
They want to have a voice in the selection. People have said this to me, like, as I'm doing my book tour, they're like, I love this book because I love how you talk about being an independent, what it means. I feel the same way. And I got involved. One person said to me, I had, in order for me to run, I had to pick a party. And obviously I picked the Democratic, but I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to. But that's the only way for me to have been able to participate in the process. Yeah. And so I think that there's something wrong with that. And I'm not even asking for a third party. I'm not even talking about a third party. I'm talking about how do we make a system that works for all, because right now it's too focused on the two parties.
One more and then a wrap up. So you had a lot of contentious days. So it got hot in that press room sometimes for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It certainly did.
When you look back at that time, do you go, oh my God, I'm glad it's over? Or were there some cool memories that you could tell us about that we didn't see? Did you have drinks with Peter Doocy one day and we just don't know about it?
It's so funny. It's kind of, I didn't have drinks with Peter Doocy, but it's kind of both, right? There's sometimes I'm like, woo, thank goodness I'm not in there anymore. And then sometimes I think about it. I'm like, look, I got to be the White House press secretary. I got to be the voice of the president of the United States and the person who is the most powerful person in the world as a first. That's a privilege and an honor. And I will never have any type of job like that before. I got to be on Air Force One Marine. I mean, I grew up in a working class family. You know,
in
Queens. Yeah, I never imagined or dreamed that I would have been there. Mm-hmm. And so there are these moments that I would have every day where I would walk through the West Wing. And I'm like, I'm walking through the West Wing. My office is right there, a stone throw away from the Oval.
They let me in.
They let me in. So there were moments like that where I would think about, I would have to pinch myself and be grateful and thankful that I had this opportunity. But there were moments where I would lay in bed and be like, oh my God, what's going to happen today? I think I talk about that in the book too. But it's, I really appreciated the opportunity to have had the job.
My final question that I ask you, that I ask everyone.
Oh, okay.
Say you've got someone standing in a bookstore. They're looking at the cover of Independent. They're considering purchasing this book. What would you tell this person about the reading experience that they'll have?
If you want a book that meets the moment in the politics that we are right now, the country, the situation of the country where we are, and you care about this country, you care about the communities that you belong to, and you want a roadmap, this is the book for you.
All right, thank you so much. Karine Jean-Pierre, the book is Independent, A Look Inside a Broken White House and Outside the Party Lines. You will be at Politics in Prose on November 4th here in D.C. at 7 p.m. and at Mahogany Books National Harbor location on November 8th at 1 p.m. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so
thank
much
you.
For being
thank
on the
you,
book Tariq. Report
thank
today.
Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
And I thank everyone for listening to this edition of The Book Report. For WTOP News,